Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Weekend. We've got Thursday night football coming. We have college basketball coming at the end of the week. We've, of course, got the Chiefs this weekend. KU back in action this weekend on the football field. A lot to get to today, and we'll do it all. We've got our betting insider, PJ Glasser, joining the program bottom of this hour to get us ready for some Thursday night football and the football betting weekend. We will also have our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, at 10 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation, not just about the disappointing game in Houston for K-State, what it all means now. We have our first CFP rankings. We have some clarity on things. We'll get into all of that and, of course, talk some college basketball with Fitz of GoPowerCat.com as well. The IHOP hotline will be open for you otherwise, and it is brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with the new IHOP House faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. That number is 869-1240. Tommy, good morning. The sun came up. We're 2 days past an election, and the sun's come up both days.
Hey, feel good. Yeah, feel good about it. I mean, just overall, like, seeing the sunshine outside today is nice. I know that we are going to probably, I think it looks like, get some more rain maybe tomorrow and into the weekend, which obviously is much needed. Yep. But the one thing, I don't love the time change, but the one thing about the time change is not feeling like you're driving to work in the dark, which is good. And so that's been good the last few days, and having the sunshine out is also good too.
I don't like that. This time driving home from work in pitch black, like,
It's a trade-off.
I don't this trade. I like the other trade. Okay. I'd rather it stay a little lighter, a little longer into the day, but hey, it's okay.
Hey, Tommy.
Jad, yeah.
I still drive to work in the dark.
Here at like 1 o'clock in the morning, though.
There's no time change that could help you with that, Jad.
None exactly. And I guess if I'm being honest, I kind of like driving in the dark, so it's okay, but still.
I don't like the time change. It gets dark too early. It's fine. It's whatever. We're getting to that point of the year where it's so cold that I just don't really care anymore. It's just like we go into lockdown mode until the sun comes out again. But we are getting some rain. By the way, speaking of that, I'd invite keep an eye to 12 News and Catch It Kansas, our friends covering high school sports, because a lot of high school football playoff games are being moved up, are being moved to different days. There's a lot of changes. It is the playoffs. So you need any of that information, you can go over to Catch Kansas. We'll talk to TJ Cleland about that tomorrow. But that is happening. Some of those playoff games are now tonight. So if you're following a team not closely, you might pay attention to that schedule before you make all your plans. We had a trade deadline come and go in the NFL. We had the CFP rankings come and go, all sort of lost in the chaos of election season, but we're through all that, Tommy. The trade deadline, the most interesting thing is that the Chiefs were in on Marcus Lattimore before he ended up going to Washington. He would have been pretty affordable this year, would have been a nice fit, but would have been really expensive over the back 2 years, over another 2 years forward. So I would have been pretty surprised if they did that. I'm fine that they didn't do anything. I think all in all the moves that they made collectively is enough. I think they did everything they could. And I think it's a nice collection of players. And now some of the young players on the roster are just going to have to, get a little better. They're going to have to get a little better internally at left tackle. They're going to have to get a little better internally at corner. They're going to have to get a little better internally at wide receiver depth. And I think all of those things are definitely on the table to happen. So all in all, the glaring needs that must have been filled, that could have been filled, I think the Chiefs got them filled. And I think they did a good job.
You could definitely tell what was prioritized leading up to the trade deadline from Brett Veach. I mean, clearly it was wide receiver first, and they go and get DeAndre Hopkins, and then a pass rush with Josh Uche, coming in. And then from there, it was cornerback and then probably left tackle, maybe even another wide receiver if you wanted to rank it as far as the top needs for Kansas City before the trade deadline. They got the top two accomplished, at least from a priority perspective that you know that Brett Veach was looking at. Would it have been great if they had been able to land a cornerback like a Marshon Lattimore? Sure. You know, I think that left tackle, as we talked about before and discussed, that's more difficult to obtain at a trade deadline. I would imagine that if there is a future player on the Chiefs' radar at left tackle, that's going to be more like a waiver wire, like a free agent pickup down the stretch, getting ready for a playoff push for Kansas City. But I think that's going to be dependent on injury or, you know, because I'm not sure that Wanye Morris could play any worse. And so if you are wanting to, you know, justify a move being made right now for a left tackle, well, they haven't made one yet and he's not playing well right now. So it's going to, I don't think that it's a situation where we're going to wait and see if he plays any worse, because I don't think he can play any worse. I think it's going to be more of a depth type thing if they go and acquire that.
I think, you know, you look at it and is it good enough to get them to it? Yes, it is. They're 8-0. So of course it is, right? Like, of course it's good enough. Would you like it to be better? Of course you would. I think what becomes interesting to me is the Chiefs have tried so hard for so long to solve left tackle. You know, basically in the post Eric Fisher era, they've run a lot of guys through there. They've invested a lot there. High draft capital through trades to bring other players in, a lot of money, and they still don't have it solved. And now you've got Wanye Morris and Kingsley Suamataya. I think what's really interesting, we talked a lot the other day about a guy like Xavier Worthy, who we differ in opinion on where he is now. We agree on the opinion that he'll get where he needs to be by the, you know, by whenever. Like, he'll grow into the player they thought he would. We agree on that. I'm not sure I feel that way at left tackle. And so what's interesting is they still don't have it solved, and they'll probably still have to go attack it this next offseason. Because you've got Patrick Mahomes there and you've got to protect him. So, but it is what it is for now, right? You're beholden to the growth of these players and or coaching around them, right? Like, just making it work. And they've done a really nice job of doing that so far. Always makes you hold your breath at that position because it protects your quarterback's blind side. But the Chiefs offense has done a really good job of masking it when they can. And I think DeAndre Hopkins, honestly, the way we saw them play offense against Tampa will help too, because those quick passes make it not matter nearly as much. Do they get to take as many deep shots? No, they don't. But they can still take them when they choose. And so that's what we have now. This is the Chiefs roster. It's obviously good enough to win a Super Bowl. They will get players back that are hurt, and it will make them stronger. And now, you know, I know the razor thin margin to 8-0 is there. It just becomes a question of how, you know, you stack them up against the best teams in the AFC. And we'll see one of those teams tonight, if not two of the teams you'll at least see in the playoffs tonight, depending on how the Bengals can hold out here. I think I saw they had like a 24% chance. Their window's pretty small, not like Jets small, but it's pretty small. But you gotta, you know, basically they would have to pass, I think, Indianapolis and I don't even remember who the other team is. It's on the table. Either way, we'll see Baltimore tonight, right? And so we're going to see these teams. We'll size them up. We'll keep doing that because now we're looking at the roster. And Baltimore made a move, by the way. They went and got Tre'Davious White, who's not the player he used to be, but at one point was a really good player. That's a big time area of need.
They also
for
got
them.
Deontay Johnson. I mean, they stacked up at the deadline too. I mean, the Deontay Johnson move was before the deadline, but still, I mean, they're looking for reinforcements, and from a firepower perspective, they've got it. I mean, they are explosive, and I think that, and I know we'll talk more Thursday Night Football as the show goes on, but my first thought on this matchup is this is a prime opportunity for Baltimore to say we are the class of the AFC. Like, we are the team that is most primed to prevent Kansas City from three-peating this season. And I think that this game against the Bengals, they can absolutely reestablish that.
Yeah, they can. And I'm excited about this game tonight. Obviously, it's a divisional game. When we talk about Cincinnati right now, just because I brought it up, down to the Chargers, which is the sixth team right now, the odds for them to reach the postseason are very high. Like, the Chargers are up at 88%. Everybody else is basically like 99% chance. And then you have the next three teams, which are Cincinnati, which are Denver, in which are Indianapolis. Right now, Denver and Indianapolis's chances are technically higher. And then there's Cincinnati. But I think Cincinnati's a better team than both of those teams. So we'll see how that plays out. They're desperate tonight. That's why I think this game is fun. I don't know if I think they'll win it yet. I'm curious to get PJ Glasser's take on that at the bottom of the hour. But I think we'll get a good game. And that's all we can hope for on Thursday Night Football. We got a good one last week. Let's take a quick break because we want to get plenty of time with PJ there. We talked a lot about Xavier Worthy. We've talked off the air a little bit more. Patrick Mahomes, he was asked about it a lot yesterday. I don't know why this is on the forefront of everybody's mind, but it is. I'll tell you kind of what Patrick Mahomes was saying, and then we can further that discussion of the first-round rookie, how he's fitting in for the Chiefs. We've got college football talk coming today, all kinds of good stuff on the program. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here at KH and the entire Odyssey family each and every morning. Don't go away. Sports Daily. Come right back. Back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jake Ballbrock, Tommy Caster. Seeing that the Ravens are going to wear some new helmet tonight, Tommy. Purple Rising. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Got to see him in action. I'm okay with the alternates that the NFL runs out lately. I think they've all generally been all right. This one, changing the helmet logo, though. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I think it's fine. I'm always a fan of new alternate uniforms. I don't care what the sport is. Whenever I play like a video game, I would rather do the throwbacks or the alternates or the color rush or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm always picking the unique uniform combos. I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah, I'm not typically. But I do think most of the time the NFL gets it pretty right. And when they're super wacky, we can all make fun of it. I don't think this is a super wacky situation. All right, let's get to the KFH hotline here, the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. Craig there with a message for me, I'm told. Craig, what's up? Welcome to Sports Daily.
Hey, Jacob. I just want to compliment how good you did on the election coverage the other night. You're like an all-star. You're reporting on the presidential race, and everybody in the set was excited, and I think you're completely underrated. The next day, I turned the radio on, and here you are after all that election coverage, and you're back on Sports Daily.
That's right. Back in the good spot, right? Hey, I appreciate that.
Hey, Craig, how much did Jacob pay you to call in and give him those compliments?
He did not.
Really?
I've watched this guy from when he showed up to do sports just grow into an unbelievable broadcaster. I can't say sportscaster because he does news. I just want to tell him how proud I am of him. I think he does a great job. And no, he didn't pay me anything. Savage might have bought me a beer to say it, but no one paid me anything. I just want
Craig,
to say
I appreciate
great job,
it.
Jacob.
Thank you. Election night was fun, and I appreciate that, Craig, a great deal. So they had me on touchscreen. So, you know, you see it, you know, that you touch and you go to the county by county. What's interesting,
you were doing
is,
the big wall? I had no idea. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much all night. And it was, you know, because of what was happening and because we didn't really have any highly contested races here outside of like Sedgwick County Commissioner, which was more of, you know, going in, we didn't really know. But otherwise, we had a pretty good idea, right? But the presidential became quickly, especially on this night, the most interesting. So we were hitting it a lot. What's funny about that is on the touchscreen, you know, when I first moved here, in 2014, we had kind of just gotten that thing and we would telestrate and we would do all these fun things. And at the time, like, that's high end technology that was pretty primo. Right. And so as the sports guys where we have more freedom, we would use that thing all that we'd telestrate. We do all these different things. We would make graphics. We always use that just to try it. Right. And then it kind of got passed up in, you know, technology wise. Well, now our parent company, Gray, which has hundreds of stations, they develop some technology sometimes. This is the best one they've ever done. So it was awesome. Like, it was fast. It was great. So yeah, I'm up there firing away on these counties and states. I tried to give, you know, Alabama to Jill Stein, but nobody would listen to me. No, it was fun though. It was fun. And I appreciate that, Craig.
I hope Craig recognizes the collateral damage of those comments where, you know, because I know that smile on your face, like that smug, like I'm going to have to deal with that for the rest of the show.
I love it. I love it because I know how much it bothers you. And so that's what's making me laugh. I appreciate it.
I mean, it's well deserved and I'm happy for you. Good for you.
That's right.
Craig, thanks for the comment. Now I've got to deal with this smug guy for the rest of the day.
Thanks, Craig. Speaking of, you know, awesomeness, Xavier Worthy. I think this is a really interesting conversation, by the way, one we accidentally backed into the other day about whether or not we should be expecting more out of him. What are we in week 10? I definitely think we should. Tommy does not. I think, again, I want to reiterate long term. And by the way, this weekend, I really like Xavier Worthy in the matchup against the Broncos, just FYI. And we'll get into that later in the week when we preview that game. But I do think it's been disappointing for him so far. And I think, you know, a part of it is because of the opportunity he could have taken. But I do think, in fairness, we also have to pay attention to the fact that left tackle hasn't been very good. So how much of an opportunity to get downfield has he had? I think that he is still a very valuable piece to the offense for sure. And I think DeAndre Hopkins will help him a great deal. But he should be doing more now by week 10 of a rookie season as a first round wide receiver. He should be. I think he'll get there. Patrick Mahomes was asked about it yesterday. And he of course he's going to defend his guy, but he did say he is like drawing the attention we need him to. So like at a minimum, he's helping the offense just by being there and being a threat. Mahomes did say, like, I can see that, right? When we send him out or we send him deep, it does accomplish what we need it to accomplish. And then he talked about he'll get there with some of that other stuff. So he's become a really interesting player. And what really interests me, because I don't try to emulate any like opinions or anything from anybody I just see online. I don't like to do that. And as we bring him up or that conversation happened, man, you just look and that conversation starts happening anywhere. I told you and you had to step out for the day. And Dan Israel brought it up before I could. So it's and I think it's just because that one play was such a mistake by him that it's like, what's going on here? Then everybody starts to look at the numbers. But I do think he needs to become a bigger part of the offense. I think if D-Hop doesn't open him up, though, we've got some concern.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. You said that I don't think that they should be expecting more out of him. I'm okay with having higher expectations for him. That's not my beef or where I disagree with you. I'm just not disappointed in him yet. So I think it's okay to expect more out of him. He's a first-round draft pick. Yeah, he's, you know, somebody that can be an integral part of the passing game and just the offense in general for Kansas City. So I'm okay with having higher expectations for him. That's perfectly fine. But I'm not ready yet to say I'm disappointed in his growth and in his development. And I know, and you and I went back and forth on this the other day, you know, Rashee Rice was a second-round pick. Through the first eight games of Rashee Rice's rookie campaign, he had more receptions, he had more yards than Xavier Worthy does. But Xavier Worthy is averaging more yards a catch than Rashee Rice did, and they have the same number of touchdowns. So I think that you hit the nail on the head a moment ago, and you said that really what has this under the microscope is the mistake that he made in the Monday night game. He should have walked into the end zone. That should have been a touchdown. I will concede that left and right all day. That was a mistake on the part of a rookie wide receiver who is learning and finding his way in the NFL. But I'm not willing yet or ready yet to say that I'm disappointed in where he is right now. I think he will continue to grow, and I think he'll get there. He's got the talent and the pedigree to be able to make that work. So I'm not ready yet to say that I'm concerned about him. I think I told you off air, if we get to the end of the season and it's still where it is right now, then yeah, like let's have a conversation, but I'm not ready yet to say that I'm concerned.
There's a lot of things in play. I think it's not just the mistake the mistake bothers me, because that's what he's here to do, is make that play specifically. And he was wide open. It's that because of that mistake, right? The Chiefs had to win a game in overtime. Like, they didn't get any points off that drive, if you'll remember, right? That wasn't they had to settle for a field goal.
There were a lot of reasons, though, that they had to play in overtime. I don't think you can put it all on his shoulders.
But we know even this year, and we certainly know going back to the last two when you get to the postseason, that like the Chiefs are so close, a ball bounce, like so close to not have won two Super Bowls in a row. So if it doesn't get better, I think the problem becomes like if Mahomes can't trust that play gets made, like he can't go to that play in the postseason where you don't have the room for that mistake. Like that mistake cannot happen in the playoffs. And so we're in week 10. And I think when you and I were talking and we kind of put the Rice numbers now, it wasn't so much like the year to date numbers. It is what Rice began to do in the middle part of the season. Like if you go and look at what the last three games, right, the middle portion of the season began to look like for Rice, Worthy has regressed statistically. Like he's gotten worse as the season has gone on statistically. Now, again, full disclosure, he makes that play, his stats are way better, right? Like the margins are too thin on that. But I think it's indisputable that last year we would say Rashee Rice began to take off about week six. Like his ascension started.
But you know why that
whereas
is.
Worthy doesn't feel like he's getting any better.
That was necessity for the Chiefs offense. Like Rice had to, because there were no other options. Here's the difference with Worthy through eight games. He started off the season not needing to be the number one guy because he had Rashee Rice next to him. He, even though Hollywood Brown was injured, he had Rice out there. He had Juju Smith-Schuster. Like there were other receiving options outside of Xavier Worthy where he didn't have to be the guy. Rice goes down, Smith-Schuster goes down. There's a couple of weeks where a rookie wide receiver is your number one guy. And that's a lot to put on somebody brand new into the league.
But that's what was put on Rice.
I understand that, but that was further on in the season. It was about at this point of moving on. I'm talking like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Worthy was shoved into that role as soon as Rice went down. Now you've got DeAndre Hopkins, and you had 2 weeks with Hopkins to get acclimated to the offense, where the offense doesn't have to, at least the passing game, doesn't have to run through Xavier Worthy. I agree with you. I think this weekend in Denver and moving forward, I'm starting to look at Xavier Worthy as, okay, now he can actually settle back in to the growth and the ascension that everybody's expecting from him. And if he doesn't, then yeah, let's have a conversation. But right now, I'm not ready to go there.
I'm going to give you two reasons why I think he will have a big game this weekend and why I would be very concerned if he doesn't. Patrick Surtain will almost certainly take away DeAndre Hopkins. And two, Patrick Mahomes has heard everybody talking about Worthy this year. Patrick Mahomes has a history of...
Oh, he's going to force feed him 100%.
Correct. So that's what I mean. Like this weekend should be a big Worthy game. And if it's not, I'm moderately concerned now. I would become far more concerned if he can't take it, because this is the perfect opportunity for him to go take it. And again, I think he will. I'll bet that he will. I will bet that happening this weekend with actual money. Let's talk about some other bets. BJ Glasser, he's on deck. He's ready to roll. Let's talk some bets next on Sports Daily.
KFH.
Back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster on the line, is the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. PJ Glasser Insider Calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast for more analysis. Just search Send It In wherever you find your podcast, including on the Odyssey app. PJ, welcome in. Your Ravens on Thursday Night Football tonight, wearing a new helmet. Happy Thursday Night Football to you.
To you guys as well. Yeah, it's almost like a throwback to those color rush days, right? We get the Thursday night game and the teams would be all decked out in like one color. So it's a big game tonight. I'm going tonight, which I'm excited about, my first game of the year. So should be fun. I mean, with the way that Lamar and Burrow are playing, it should be another entertaining game.
You know, so PJ, the Ravens bucked that trend. Sorry, you mentioned last week. Yeah, that trend you talked about last week with the Ravens and the NFC, they clearly bucked it.
Yeah.
How do they follow that, though, now with a short week divisional game?
I mean, that's going to be the key. You know, John Harbaugh in his career, they're 8-0 on Thursday night games. So they're normally really good in these short weeks. Cincinnati should have won the first game between these two teams the first time around. It was a crazy finish with McPherson missing the field goal and then Henry breaking off that run for them to win it in overtime. But yeah, it's going to be a great game. You know, tonight, like Cincinnati guys, this game probably is their season. They can't afford to drop to 4-6. They can't go 0-2 against Baltimore. They won't have any chance at winning that division. So the Ravens know that Cincinnati's coming in there, and they're going to play with their hair on fire. They're going to play like they absolutely have to win this game. I was really impressed with the Ravens because, Jacob, as you mentioned, I mean, we talked about it last week. Usually those 1 p.m. games, they really struggle. They bounce back after that tough Cleveland loss, which was nice to see. And, you know, now in a short week, they have to back that up and play another good game because it's tough to beat a team 2 times, especially a team as, you know, potent as the Bengals.
I'm seeing the over-under right now, PJ, at about 53 right now for this game. It's high. We know the Ravens can put up points. I mean, that's what they do offensively. We also know that the Bengals defensively this year have not been very good. So, I mean, at least in my mind, everything is trending towards an over, but I'm sure that because of all of that, it's going to be like a 17-14 game.
Exactly. Yeah, it just feels like the over's too easy, right? Yeah. I mean, Lamar and Burrow both have over 20 touchdowns this season. The first time these two teams played, it was like 41-38. The Ravens have been a dead over team this season because of how great their offense is and how bad their defense is, their secondary especially. Cincinnati for much of the year has been a good over team as well. So it feels too easy, like you said, Tommy, which is why I'm staying away from it, because it wouldn't shock me if we got another 38-35 game, but at the same time, like, it wouldn't stun me if it was 24-20 either. So I think the side and betting Cincinnati plus the 6 is the way to go, guys. Yes, they've lost 5 games this season. All 5 of those games, though, have been decided by 1 score. So it's not like they're losing to people and they're getting blown out. All these games are coming down to the wire. I don't expect tonight to be any different. So I like the Bengals plus the 6. As for the total, I'm staying away from that. I could see it being higher scoring, or I could see it being a game in the mid-20s.
Could it be one where, and we don't do, you know, I know a lot of people don't advocate for teasers, but in a situation like that, is there a tease option if you put them together? Like, maybe you think the total is just a little too high. Maybe you like the Bengals but wish they had a little more. Is there any value in putting those together and adding a little each way?
I don't think this is a good game to tease. I think a lot of people might want to tease it just because, again, if you tease the Ravens, you can just get them down on the money line with them being 6-point favorites. I would actually tease it the other way and take Cincinnati plus 12 if I had to do it. And then, again, if you want to tease the total, maybe you tease it down to like 46.5 or something like that. But I think there are some good options on the board this week in the NFL on Sunday for some teaser opportunities. I don't think this Ravens-Bengals game is a good teaser one. I would just take the Bengals plus the 6.
We'll get back to the NFL in just a few minutes, PJ, but I want to go to college football for a second because we've got, you know, obviously the first college football playoff rankings came out earlier this week, and that some of the top teams are, you know, playing, I guess, maybe what you could look at on paper as cupcake games. I wonder what your thought is on, you know, some of these major matchups, like whether it's Oregon against Maryland or Ohio State against Purdue, Miami taking on Georgia Tech. Is there a game that's featuring maybe a top 5 or top 10 team against an opponent where it looks like, you know, it's such a big number that they're going to have trouble covering?
Ohio State, I think, is going to roll this week. I think Oregon's going to roll this week against Maryland. I think those teams are fine. Texas, I think they're going to be good against Florida as well. They're coming off their bye week. I expect them to look good. Florida's obviously got the injury to their quarterback, so they're going to be on their third string. I think all those teams would roll. If you're looking for a top 5 team to struggle this week, Tommy, I think it's Miami. I think that would be the team going on the road and playing Georgia Tech, laying an 11.5. Miami's just one of these teams, guys. It's kind of been playing down to the level of their competition. You know, you think about some of their results so far in the ACC. Fortunate to win that game against Virginia Tech. Fortunate to win that game against Cal. Only beat Louisville by 7. They were down 11 points in the second half to Duke last week before just flipping on another switch and winning that game by 20. But, you know, Miami's been the kind of team that, yes, their offense is so good, but their defense has not been good, that they've been kind of letting some of these big underdogs hang around. And Georgia Tech's coming off a bye week. That's a good offensive team that's healthy. And I think Georgia Tech can keep it close. So Georgia Tech plus 11.5. If you're looking for kind of one of those like top five, top six teams, it could be on upset alert. Obviously, Georgia's got the toughest game of the weekend of any of the top teams. But any of those teams that are double-digit spreads, I would look at Georgia Tech keeping it close.
PJ Glasser, our betting insider, joining us now. Let's stay in college football and go to KU, who was off last week. 2.5 points is all this is. KU's at home against Iowa State, a team with playoff aspirations, but a team that lost last week. Kansas has a chance to be a real spoiler in the Big 12. What do you think of that 2.5 point line? I kind of looked at it as like a great opportunity for Kansas, but I also didn't expect it to only be a 2.5 point line. So now I don't really know what to think of it.
Yeah, that's a stinky line, isn't it? Only being 2.5. I mean, the line tells you that Kansas is the right play. I mean, you got Iowa State, who's been the far superior team this season, only laying a short number under a field goal. And the matchup for him should be pretty good, right? Like, obviously, Kansas, their offense has struggled for much of the year without Kotelniki, and the passing game has not been good. And, like, going up against Iowa State, who's so well coached and good defensively and thrives off, like, winning the turnover battle and beating other teams off of their mistakes, like, this should be a good matchup for him. But that line is a tricky one. I think with these Big 12 teams, guys, that have obviously been good for much of the year, like, you're going to start to see some, like, stinky lines with them, because odds makers, books makers, professionals, they kind of expect the regression to start hitting. They expect the other shoe to drop. That's why we saw a couple weeks ago, like, BYU was underdogs to unranked UCF, right? This week, they're laying a short number to Utah. This is why Iowa State, their spread's a little bit fishy against Kansas. So I think these Big 12 games, you know, I think more often than not, you see lines like this, and you would take Kansas. You would clearly take the team that it doesn't feel like you're supposed to take. But in these Big 12 matchups, I don't know if most of them, but that's the case. You know, BYU just keeps covering spreads. I think Iowa State's the much better team. I think now that you're getting them at 2.5, normally I'd be on the side of Kansas, but not in this game. I actually like the Cyclones.
PJ, we haven't talked in a minute about the Heisman race, and, you know, week by week things change, you know, all the time. Cam Ward, you know, now is the odds-on favorite in that race, but really it's, I don't want to say it's anybody's game, but it's definitely not definitive at this point. What are you seeing in that race? Is there, at this point, any kind of angle with the futures, or is it something that you want to wait on until a little bit later?
You know, the Heisman this year, guys, is so fascinating. I can't really remember a year like it where you're just, it's almost like process of elimination every week, you know, and it's kind of just going to be like the last man standing who seems like it's going to win the award. I think Travis Hunter right now, if you have any Travis Hunter tickets in your pocket, I think you got to be feeling pretty good. Colorado had a heck of a bye week, guys, with Kansas State losing and Iowa State losing. And now all of a sudden they have a shot to maybe make it to the Big 12 championship game. I think if Colorado makes it to the Big 12 title game and they have a chance to make it to the college football playoff, I think because of what Travis Hunter's doing on both sides of the ball, I think there's a great chance that he's going to win. Dylan Gabriel's having a good year, but it feels like we have this every year at the beginning of November where the quarterback of the number one team in the country is kind of in contention for the Heisman, but I don't see him really winning the award. Cam Ward, I think, would be the other guy. He has the numbers and the stats, and obviously his team's undefeated and they're top five, but it just feels like Miami's kind of a fraudulent top five, right? They've definitely had a couple of close calls and games where they certainly could have lost. So I think it comes down to Cam Ward and it comes down to Travis Hunter. I love the Ash and Genty story, but it just kind of feels like he isn't having the kind of games that he was earlier on in the year. So it just depends for people. Like, if you're a believer in Colorado, if you think the Buffs are going to be a contender in the Big 12 and play in the Big 12 title game, I think Hunter is going to win the award. If you think they lose a couple of games here down the stretch, I think it's going to go to Cam Ward of Miami.
I have a future. I took JT at the beginning of the year. I'm going to need that to change. Maybe they'll get into the playoff. I don't know. All right, let's go back to the NFL, BJ. Nothing screams at us. Let's start with your favorites this week, and then we can get to the Chiefs in a little bit.
My favorites, guys, couple bets I like. Let's start with San Francisco, -6 at Tampa Bay. I think this is a brutal spot for the Bucks, who are obviously coming off that OT game against the Chiefs. They got a short week, and they go up against a San Francisco team that's coming off a bye, right? Like, you can't get a more polar opposite kind of game in terms of healthiness or freshness than this one, with the Niners coming off a bye, Bucks coming off a short week on a Monday night overtime game. We know Tampa's dealing with injuries. They're without Godwin and Evans. It felt like they exerted so much energy against the Chiefs with that comeback, that final drive, going to overtime, and now they got to turn around and play a really physical team, and a Niners team that's getting healthy. McCaffrey's back at practice this week. So I think anything under a touchdown with San Francisco, I like the Niners quite a bit at -6. And then a game that I really can't wait to watch this week is the Commanders and the Steelers. A big game for both teams. Obviously, Washington's been a great surprise. I think Pittsburgh's been a big surprise too. Russ has played well the first couple games. They're coming off a bye week. Guys, Mike Tomlin's won 7 straight games off a bye. He's 5-2 against the spread. And obviously, Jaden Daniels has been taking the league by storm. But if there's a team that might be equipped to stop him, it would be Pittsburgh, because they see Lamar twice a year and they know all about the running quarterback and that kind of skill set. I can tell you as a Ravens fan too, if there's a team that Lamar struggles with year after year, it is Pittsburgh. They're always the team that forces the most turnovers off them, that stops them in the run game the most. So I think the Steelers are going to have a good game plan. You're getting them at the key number of 3. I like the Steelers off of a bye week. Keep in mind, too, Washington's got Philly upcoming on Thursday, right? So maybe a little bit of a look ahead for them. Huge divisional matchup on a short week. Pittsburgh's going to have their full attention on Washington in this game. I'll take the Steelers +3.
We talked about Baltimore and Thursday Night Football at the very beginning of this segment a week ago, PJ. On paper, at least, the Ravens-Broncos matchup looked like it was one of the games of the week, and then Baltimore just smacked around the Broncos. Those same Broncos now playing the Chiefs this weekend. And, you know, the number is bigger probably, you know, in response to what happened a week ago with Denver. I'm seeing a line at about 7.5 right now, so more than a touchdown number for the Chiefs to lay. That seems a little fishy to me, because even though the Broncos did get smacked around, you know, they've won some games, and Bo Nix has looked like a pretty decent rookie quarterback. What do you like in this matchup as far as an angle is concerned? Do you think that the number is too big for Kansas City to lay?
I do, guys. And as we've been on the air, this line continues to drop. It was 8.5 this morning before I came on with you guys. It's 8. Now I'm looking at BetMGM and it's down to 7.5. We saw something similar when the Chiefs played the Raiders a couple weeks ago, and the Raiders covered that game under a touchdown. So they lost by 7. I kind of see the same thing with Denver. Look, I was just talking about what a brutal spot it was for Tampa, right? Coming off a Monday night game, overtime game. Well, Kansas City's dealing with the same thing. You guys know they have the Bills on deck, which is the biggest game of the season. Could decide MVP for Josh Allen. Certainly looks like it's going to decide who gets the number one seed in the AFC. So maybe a little bit of a look ahead for the Chiefs in that aspect, but I think so many people are going to see that the Broncos got smashed by the Ravens last week, and now you're getting, you know, them at an even shorter price against the Chiefs, and people are going to like Kansas City. I think this line movement dropping down, though, guys, I like Denver to keep it close +7.5.
That's interesting. I don't know if I do. I mean, Sertan, the Chiefs offense feels like it's clicking to me at the highest pace. And maybe you look at it there at 41.5. As an opportunity, as the Chiefs defense is probably not as good as it was a few weeks ago. I mean, any thought to that? Because Mahomes is starting to cook a little bit. And I know Sertan's there, but Sertan can't guard Hopkins and Kelsey and, you know, over the top to Worthy and, you know, the running backs and Kareem Hunt. They still, I don't know, maybe offense is a way to look at this game, because Kansas City's defense wasn't as good as it was 2-3 weeks ago, and their offense is much better than it was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Honestly, I think a Denver team total under is a great bet as well. I'm looking at BetMGM, 16.5 points. Like, do we see Denver scoring 17 on this Chiefs defense? You know, they got 10 on Baltimore last week. So Denver's only path to victory, if you like the Broncos, you got to correlate it with the under. Like, the Chiefs defense to begin with is so great. If Denver's going to keep this game close, guys, it's going to be 20-13. It's going to be 17-10. So I think if you like Denver, you got to like the under. But as we're talking about it, because yes, Bo Nix definitely does terrify me. There were throws that he missed in that Ravens game last week that really could have made that game closer than it was, could have applied a little bit more pressure against Baltimore. So Bo Nix on the road in Arrowhead definitely does scare you. The line movement moving more so and more so down towards the Chiefs made me like Denver a little bit, certainly with the potential look ahead spot against the Bills. But now that more I think about it, guys, Broncos team total under 16.5. I think that's the way to go in this game.
Okay. We like it. PJ, we appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. Get rowdy. Stay safe out there. And hopefully for all of us, it typically is better. Let's have a lot of points scored.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it, guys. Have a good week. Talk to you soon.
There goes PJ Glasser, the host of Send It In and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. We will talk about that Ravens-Bengals game. I love putting in all the same game parlays and things on Thursday Night Football. I'm not real sure how to attack it. I do think there's an opportunity to make money with it tonight. I'm not 100% sure where. We'll talk about that in the second hour. But when we return, we go back-to-back guests. Our K-State insider, excuse me, so sick of it, Tommy. Tim Fitzgerald will join us. GoPowerCat.com. I want to get his take on Houston, the Big 12 overall, the CFP rankings, and of course, K-State hoops. That's next on Sports Daily.
Just because it's 4 o'clock doesn't mean your day's wrapping
in
up.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We'll get connected in just a little bit with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. We'll give him a buzz waiting on that connection, but we're talking K-State. It's a good place to start this conversation, Tommy. The CFP rankings come out. Only BYU is in. Not surprising after K-State and Iowa State lose. I think, you know, if you want to see, and honestly, this is probably the best scenario for K-State also, is for BYU to just win the rest of their games. Like, if you're a Big 12 fan, if you're a K-State fan, BYU can just win the rest of their games. And then what you would have is maybe they creep up high enough that if they were to lose in a Big 12 championship game, then you could get two Big 12 teams in that way. So that was really the takeaway for me. Otherwise, I don't think it matters too much in the CFP just yet. I don't think there was anything egregious. I don't think some of these unbeaten teams that haven't played anybody are going to stay unbeaten and they'll fall out. So it's far from settled. It's a pretty good starting point. I think it's fair. I think it's a fair starting point. And what you have now in the Big 12 is Iowa State with one loss, Colorado with one loss, and then K-State, Texas Tech, Cincinnati, Arizona State, and West Virginia all with two losses. So it is a jumbled mess in the Big 12, Tommy. But I didn't have any problems with the CFP.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically it was what we thought it would be going into it. I mean, you know, I think really what my takeaway from the first rankings was what could have been, you know, what could have been had Iowa State not lost, what could have been had Kansas State not lost. Now, would Kansas State have gotten all the way up to number 12 had they won against Houston on Saturday? Probably not. You know, I do think that as I'm just watching them reveal those teams, I'm thinking to myself, man, what could have been? It could have been a little bit different. And then, you know, had a more clear view on what it was going to take and have it not potentially be as uphill of a battle for Kansas State.
Let's bring in Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. GoPowerCat.com, at Life of Fitz on X. Fitz, it's a really strange Big 12 right now. You know, you look back at it, and at the time, the two big wins we thought for K-State, which were Arizona and Oklahoma State, don't look like big wins at all now. And, you know, you got to – Colorado is the big win of the year for sure, and on the road against West Virginia. that's handy, but this probably is going to be a mess. Are you, where's your Jayhawk gear? Because K-State fans ought to become the biggest Jayhawk fans the rest of the way. Kansas can basically help K-State in every game that they'll play the rest of the way.
It's crazy how the perceptions of what is a hard and easy schedule have changed over the last 3 months. I mean, look, K-State's heading into an easy stretch, right? Arizona State and Cincinnati.
Right, yeah.
No, and Colorado's got to still play Oklahoma State and Utah. That's tough. You know, it's just amazing. But let's just say this. I don't think Colorado's losing. I don't. I think they're playing as well as anybody in this conference has. They're starting to show some consistency in performance. And if BYU does lose, it's only going to be a single game, so that won't help Kansas State in any way. So they really just need someone to beat Colorado, and K-State went out, and they're back in charge of their fate for the most part.
Yeah, I know, Fitz, it's kind of like picking at a scab a little bit, but, you know, doing a postmortem after the Houston game on Saturday. I mean, I think the one thing that the Cougars did really well, of course, they played really solid defense for the most part, but they were able to muddy the game up literally and figuratively and just really get it to a point to where they were able to take Kansas State out of their rhythm. And from an athletic talent standpoint, Houston is not anywhere close, I don't think, especially offensively, to where Kansas State is. But the one thing about Willie Fritz is that he can muddy those games up, and he knows how to play the Wildcats. That's a lot of different aspects of that game. What were some big takeaways from you?
Well, exactly that. You know, he coached that game in a way that reminded me of Bill Snyder. I'm going to take these out. That worked. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
We can. Yep.
I can't hear you. These things. He coached that game in a way that reminded me of Bill Snyder, in the fact that he was outmanned. He knew that. So he had to find a way, as you put it perfectly, muddy up the game and keep it a little bit ugly, keep the scoring down, and then put K-State in a position, hopefully at some point in the fourth quarter, where they'll make a mistake. And K-State walked right into that by trying to throw the ball. Then after that, you could just see the momentum and everything shift in that game. And it was now pretty much Houston in control the rest of the way. All because K-State forgot that sometimes the best play call in football is punt. Because if they had just run the ball three times and punted, their defense probably would have won the game for them.
But Houston took away Avery's legs too, right?
I think we're now realizing Avery was still hurt because he wasn't able to run. He doesn't have much pep to his step right now. I mean, he's getting tracked down pretty easily. We saw Dylan Edwards get tracked down a few times. I thought again, K-State had worse footing than their opponent in a bad weather situation, which is an ongoing concern of mine. How does that keep happening? So, yeah, it was just one of those nightmare scenarios. K-State did everything it needed to do to participate in that nightmare. I mean, this was all in their control, and they didn't control what they could.
Do we think
there's any path, Fit? Sorry, Tommy. As you mentioned the path to get there, but is there an, you know, if they win out and one of those wins is Iowa State, we saw 18 is their ranking. They'd probably need to get up to what, 11 to, you know, depending on what happens, 7 spots with a game against Iowa State still remaining. Is there enough on the bone for them to get there potentially?
I don't think so. I don't see any way, not based on what I just saw from the ratings. Yeah, they'll move up, but they would get frog leaped. They just would. What evidence do I have of that? Indiana with an absolutely worthless schedule. They've beaten one winning team this year, and that team's 5-4, Washington. And you've got them ahead of BYU, which has played 3 teams with winning records. In fact, 2 teams in the CFP's own rankings. They've beaten SMU and Kansas State, and they're behind Indiana. So, no, the fix is in for the most part. There is a path for the Big 12 to get to in. as long as BYU doesn't win the conference. If BYU goes undefeated and loses the championship game, that's the chance. It would have been the same maybe for Iowa State, but now they had the loss. And, you know, we can complain about the committee, which I like to do because I can't explain some of the things they did. But at the end of the day, the Big 12 with the losses by Iowa State and Kansas State did itself dirty. It absolutely ruined its most honest chance to get two schools into that playoff. If you've got two 12-0 or 11-1 and 12-0 teams playing in a championship game, it's going to be hard to say no. But now pretty much you hope that 12-1 BYU could get in if they lost a championship game. But I sense BYU might lose a game along here, and the Big 12 will be right back to just getting one team in because of their own competitive nature of this conference.
I keep going back, Fitz, to you mentioned Willie Fritz and obviously the way that he coached the game on Saturday versus Kansas State. Zion Chris is not, you know, this outstanding quarterback. Like he definitely took the role over earlier this season or a couple weeks ago from Donovan Smith, primarily because of what he did against Kansas State. But I mean, he's not a Heisman guy, right? Like he did well in that role, and Willie Fritz put him in positions to be able to be successful. He ran the ball a ton from the quarterback position. He didn't throw it much, but he was 11 of 11 throwing the football. And as I'm looking at, you know, not only his performance, but then the way that Kansas State defensively should respond to that or adjust to that with future games and whether they're taking on quarterbacks that are mobile or not, to me, just even looking at what Chris did in this game leads me to believe that there probably should be some adjustments defensively for Kansas State.
Well, I think they took advantage of, obviously, K-State guys in coverage peeking into the backfield.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that. They perfectly timed when they wanted to throw the ball and how they wanted to do that. And they took advantage of K-State's own tendencies. And I think that points out to what Chris Klieman said after the game. We got to get back to fundamentals. That includes your assignment here is to cover this dude. That's it. Yeah, you got to be aware of what else is going on the field, but you can't forget that duty, and that's what they kept doing. I was astonished at the lack of fundamentals and discipline showed by K-State in this game. Coach Klieman was right, but also I thought the coaches made some really egregious errors in what they did. So, I can't imagine getting this far into your season and then just not paying attention to details in the game. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how that works.
Let's talk basketball because that football game is really annoying and aggravating. And hopefully Colorado loses a game and they get back in it. Let's talk basketball. I thought from the beginning, I've thought this collection of players seemed to fit, right? I think, you know, it's not just that they got a lot of talented players, it's that Jerome Tang went and got a bunch of players that seem to, on paper, whatever you want to call it, do fit together well. Are they going to take this many threes? I think they are, because I think Jerome Tang, every time he's asked about it, is like, yeah, I have no problem with it. Not just with Housen, who's taken a ton, but they're kind of all taking a lot of threes. Is that the identity of this team? Do they want to shoot the three that way, you think?
I think they want to shoot it more often because they're better at it.
For sure they're better at it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every statistical category that gave them trouble last year was improved upon in the opening. Granted, it's New Orleans, but that's a trend I welcome. For example, their season low last year in turnovers was 10, and they had 9 in their first game of the season. So they're shooting the three. I think they shot 38% as a team last year. They shot 31.5%. So, yeah, I think so. But what's going to happen here is they're going to go through a period of showing on film that they're going to shoot the three, and Brendan Housen is going to shoot that three from deep, and the defense will have to adjust and come out and cover them. Because if you're going to shoot 38%, I don't care if you're from 30 feet out, you need to get a hand in that guy's face. So at that point, then I think the inside game will really loosen up. And that was one of the problems I had last year. Nobody had to really worry about you shooting a three-pointer because that would probably be a miss. And they could just sag back and let you take that. But now they're going to have to move their defense around to address guys, and you know, they'll be able to spread the floor out a little bit better.
It was a game, the opening night on Tuesday against New Orleans Fitz, where you know, all offseason, I feel like the topic of conversation is really centered around the newcomers, whether it's Housen or Coleman Hawkins, Doug McDaniel, Max Jones. But it was David Gasson that led the team on Tuesday night. You know, double-double for him, 2 points off of his career high, 21 and 15. And I really felt like, just in watching that game, he came out of the gate with this effort level that was through the roof. And to me, you know, I think that obviously sets a nice precedent as the beginning parts of the season roll on, that, yeah, the attention may have been on the newcomers and the transfers and all of that, but it was a returner that really led the Wildcats on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was cool to watch. When he plays hard, he's a tough matchup for anyone because of his speed and athleticism. He's got good hops, so he can get up there and get boards. And plus, he played hurt almost all last year. He's having back problems. And so I think this is a good sign that David could have a great season as long as he can stay healthy. But let's also not forget, maybe the ultimate motivator is that he's got a lot of competition for playing time this year.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get gifted playing time. I don't care if you are Coleman Hawkins. If you're not playing well, there's someone on the bench that will come in and play and probably be more effective. And that's just a radical change from what they've had. In fact, you could argue they've got too many guys that need to be in the rotation. I don't know how Jerome Tang's going to sort it out. But that's a better problem than what they had last year with not enough dudes that could dribble, pass, and shoot, which seems like a basic requirement.
That would be a good place to start with basketball. Mm-hmm. You look at the schedule. You know, KU is going to play a ton of really good teams early on. We're going to know a lot about KU real quick if we don't already. K-State doesn't have that.
No.
They've got LSU, who right now I think people are moderately high on LSU, but they really aren't going to get into a lot of meat until, I don't know, mid-December.
Yeah,
it's going to be a while. So what should we be looking for in a lot of these early games where they probably will be able to kind of roll a little bit?
Yeah, they should be taking care of business. And I think if the Big 12 was at 18 conference games and not 20, Jerome Tang would have a little more meat on the bone here. But I think he decided with this rebuild, unlike last year when he really challenged his team and they never got their footing, that he was going to let this group kind of grow into each other and become a better team. Now, am I concerned about when they start Big 12 play, it's going to be a shock to the system? Oh, hey, heck yes. But I think this is kind of an altered plan. And he also knows that in reality, when you're playing 20 Big 12 conference games, you don't need to worry about having enough quad one wins or quality of strength of schedule. The conference is going to take care of that. So I think he laid out a much more realistic pathway for his team. But I'll tell you what, this is also not a non-conference schedule that you want if you're going to be on the bubble, because that could bump you on the wrong side of the bubble. But I think he feels like he's got a team that can firmly get in. He just needs them to have time to kind of gel and get used to each other.
Fitz, let's do a really quick therapy session. I'll be honest with you. This isn't a question about X's and O's or their schedule, wins and losses, that sort of thing. But one thing I mentioned to Jacob the other day that I really felt like, and I do still feel this way, that what the Wildcats and what Jerome Tang needs this season more than anything else is just a sense of calm because of how crazy things were last season, the roller coaster of emotions, distractions off the court, all the speculation, all of that. And I know that that can then turn into success on the court, but how important do you think that is for the Wildcats as they continue on, that just to have just calm and just to go out and play basketball and not make headlines in a lot of different ways, maybe be under the radar a little bit?
An enormous preseason distraction, self-inflicted by the university. Followed by, bluntly, that team wasn't good enough. I was enjoyed watching that game, even though it was a mismatch, so much more than last year, because last year they'd come down and you knew they were going to either take a bad shot or turn the ball over. And it was just the most – I thought Jerome Tang and his coaching staff did an incredible job to get that bunch to the postseason, because that was not a good team. They didn't fit together in any way. They were really a bunch of misfit toys that didn't all fit together, and they didn't have a true point guard that could control things. And I didn't enjoy watching that team play in any way. They played a bad brand and a sloppy brand, and they still made it to the postseason in a tough conference, and that's a big compliment. This team's different. This team's got a lot more pieces. They fit together much better, and they got dudes. And you can take Doug McDaniel off the floor. We all expected him to start, and they're fine with C.J. Jones. And I think the key here is Max Jones is a dude, and we didn't see that coming. We saw him coming out of a smaller school, and it's turned out this guy's going to be really good for Kansas State.
I can't wait for him to get to Big 12 play. Again, nothing's changed on the fact that like the way it all fits together. And I do think just talent wise, it's Tang's best collection so far. All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going at GoPowerCat.com?
Well, a little bit slower this week. The podcast released this morning. So the PowerCat podcast is out. Honestly, we're lighter on coverage because it's an off week. We need it too, but we will be back for Saturday's game at Bramlage Coliseum. It's Cleveland State, and then push right into game week next week because it's enormous. Arizona State's a really good team. If Scadaboo's healthy, he's one of my favorite players in the Big 12. He's a beast. K-State's going to have its hands full if they continue to kind of play sluggish and disengaged from any kind of passion for the game.
Here we go. It'll be a week. GoPowerCat.com. Follow Fitz at Life of Fitz on X. Be good. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll catch our breath after the back-to-back guest there. The IHOP hotline will open back up. Of course, brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with your new IHOP house faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday, 869-1240. Don't go away. Sports Daily right after this.
EFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Crestview Country Club, sponsor of the program. Fall at the club, always busy. Going to be a little rain. I was going to try and play a little golf tomorrow, but it might get rained out. That's all right, because they've got a simulator there, Tommy, that you can go get in on if you're feeling it. And then, of course, the holidays at the club, brunch experiences. There's a New Year's Eve event. Thanksgiving, you can go in and eat Thanksgiving. You can get some, take it home, finish cooking it. We utilize it every year we've been there. We have no family here. It's real handy. But give them a call. Talk about all the different memberships. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. As we come back, Tommy, Thursday Night Football. Let's get into it a little bit. I don't know how to handle this one. We talked to PJ Glasser. He thought, you know, the over maybe looked too high. That stuff doesn't jump out at me. I do think we're going to get points, which is usually good for betting, right, for those same game parlays. But I don't have a great feel for which players. I think Ja'Marr Chase is always a guy I like to go after just because he's incredible, right? Burrow's been really good lately. Burrow's quietly having an unreal season. Everybody talks about, you know, the year Lamar Jackson's having and all these quarterbacks. Burrow's got 20 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, right? And 2,200 yards already through 9 games. So, you know, he's trending to 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns here. And I feel like we're not talking quite enough about, and I know it's because of their record, but Burrow's been on fire.
Yeah, it's because of their record, number one. But I think what also, and I'm going to give Joe Burrow a little bit of credit here, I think what also makes it impressive is the fact that they've not really had T. Higgins as of late, and they're not going to have him again tonight. So, you know, I think that that's going to play a role in it too. And I think that that also shows how important and how essential Ja'Marr Chase is to your team. And I know that he's a guy that is going to garner a significant amount of money, you know, from any team. Like, he'll be the highest paid receiver in the NFL and all of that. The Bengals, you know, absolutely have to prioritize budgeting him in long term, because the bottom line is that when you don't have T. Higgins, Burrow's, you know, he has to lean on Ja'Marr Chase. And I don't know if there's a better wide receiver in the league to lean on when you need somebody like Ja'Marr Chase. You absolutely have to prioritize that.
It's Chase and Jefferson for me. I don't know which one I'd take over the other. Probably, I guess I'd take Jefferson, but Chase is, it's funny. I think Burrow gets overshadowed because of Mahomes, right? And I think that Chase gets overshadowed a little bit because of Jefferson, but you're talking about like players that look like they're, you know, they're probably going to be like Hall of Fame players and they just happen to play for the same team. They get overshadowed a little bit. I'm with PJ though on, if you're taking a side, I do like the Bengals and the points here. Boy, stylistically, I just, this Bengals defense that struggled, it's going to be hard for me not to take that over. I know it's a lot of points, but man.
That was my point in asking him the question, was that everything points to the over being the play.
I know, which is scary.
Even though the number is at 53 right now, which is high. I mean, clearly that line is high for a reason. But even knowing that, everything is still telling me bet the over, bet the over, bet the over. You know, because of the weapons that Baltimore has, because of how bad the defense has been for the Bengals. I mean, the defense is and the offensive line, the reason why the Bengals have the record that they have. So all of those things point to that, which inevitably probably means that it's going to be a really low scoring defensive matchup.
You know, we've had, and I'd have to go back and look at each Thursday night game each week, and it feels that old trend of those games being duds, though. Don't you think that's kind of out of the, you know, we're out of that woods on that. The Jets and the Texans were good. 21-13, certainly not as much offense as that one, but I wouldn't call that like a dud. I think there were injuries involved there. Was it Rams Vikings the week before? 50 points there between those two teams. And I'm just going week by week here. And looking, Broncos Saints, certainly that was the night the Broncos put up 33. That was a weird game in general, but still 43 points. You know, you find a way to get there. We'll go back one more week just to look at the recent history. In week 6 is when you had 60 points between the Niners and the Seahawks. So for a long time, I think we just defaulted into, oh, Thursday night football, the offenses will struggle. It hasn't really been the case this year. So I hope we get a lot of points. It's a big time game. I think you laugh every time I would still call the Bengals a threat in the AFC. And I get it. They're 4-5. They got to get there first. But man, if they get there, it's kind of like what we've said with the Chiefs last year. If you get there with Burrow based on his history, if they can get there, it's Burrow in the playoffs. And I think anytime you got a player like that in the playoffs, it's, you know, it's worth calling it a threat. They played in the Chiefs barely got them.
There are a lot of teams that are that way. The Jets are a threat. There are teams that you look at in both conferences that are probably going to miss the playoffs that are a threat when you play them because they've underperformed, they've underachieved, all of that. And so I guess in that context, if you want to call the Bengals a threat, then I would agree with that. I don't think that they're a threat probably in the way that you mean it, because I don't think they're going to get to where they need to be long-term playoff threat. But in a one-week context where they could play spoiler, I'm not even talking about in the playoffs. I'm talking about as the regular season goes on.
Of course they can win.
They can be a one-week threat to any team that they play against, but they're not going to challenge, I don't believe, any of the top teams in the conference in the playoffs, because I don't think they're going to get there.
That's a different conversation. So what I would identify as a threat to me, the way I'm saying it, is if you played that team, and I'm talking about the Chiefs here, if the Chiefs played that particular team in the playoffs, there is a path where the Chiefs could get beat. I would tell you that I think there are far more of those teams this year. Even in a year where the Chiefs have started unbeaten, I think there are more of those teams this year than I thought there would be going into the year. I only thought there would be a handful. I don't think that anymore. I think Buffalo certainly is. I would define the Jets that way. They're not going to get there, I don't think, but I would define them that way. I think Pittsburgh absolutely is. Didn't see that coming. Baltimore, we did see coming. We thought before the year Cincinnati would be, so that's not a surprise. Houston's probably less of a threat, in all honesty, than we thought. And maybe they'll get back there, but the Chargers are certainly more of a threat. And I think, the Chargers, say what you want, and I know they've played, but the Chargers have better point differential right now than the Chiefs do. Like the Chargers, I think with the way they play defense and can run the ball, you're telling me that couldn't come into Arrowhead and present problems? I think it absolutely could. And then in the NFC is where there's way more than we thought there would be. Nobody thought Washington would be that way. I want to say I don't think that, but how can you sit here and say that watching the way they play, right? Philadelphia, they're starting to find their groove. And obviously Detroit is, I would say Minnesota is. I think everybody before the year and would still say Green Bay is. Is Atlanta a threat now? I mean, probably. Again, another team that the Chiefs, we've seen that matchup. And then I don't think anybody necessarily is out west unless the Niners get healthy, which if they get healthy, they certainly are. But there are more of them, and I think the Bengals are squarely in the middle of that. If they're to play in the postseason, is that a team that could beat the Chiefs? I think the answer to that is sure.
And that's fine. I mean, that's a fine conversation to have. But when you put it in the context of will they be able to get to that point, that's really where I'm wanting to pump the brakes on teams like the Bengals, because I think it's a futile conversation to have on could they beat a team like the Chiefs in the playoffs. Sure, they could. Anybody could beat anybody in the playoffs. But are the Bengals even going to get to the playoffs? Like, that's where I start to pump the brakes a little bit. Or will they be in a position to even play the Chiefs in the playoffs? I mean, I think that if the Chiefs, I mean, obviously they're pacing towards the number one overall seed. I think I agree with PJ when he says that the game in Buffalo next week will probably ultimately determine who the number one seed in the AFC is. The Chiefs can, with their game against the Broncos, can all but wrap up the division. I mean, super early in the year if they beat the Broncos. I mean, it's not totally done, but I mean, it certainly will go a long way. So let's assume that the Chiefs are the number one seed, and let's say that even the Bengals sneak in to the playoffs as the very last seed. I mean, they're going to have to play a couple of games, you know, or at least one game before they would even get to a Chiefs team that has a bye and all of that. So like there are a lot of different dominoes that have to fall a certain way for this exercise to even come to fruition.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, I think just in and of itself, can a team like the Bengals beat a team like the Chiefs in the playoffs? Sure. I think it's unlikely that it even gets to that point.
Okay, so I'm going to get the right now, the two teams, there are six teams ahead of the Bengals that they're probably not going to pass. The other, they would need to be the better of Indianapolis and Denver and Cincinnati. Denver has a one-game lead over Cincinnati. Indianapolis has the same record. Cincinnati will have a difficult schedule because of the division they play in, but man, I think Cincinnati's way better than Indianapolis, and I think they're way better than Denver, and they just have to be the best of those three teams to get in.
I disagree with you. I mean, I think that when you look at the stars on the team, sure. I mean, you're going to put Joe Burrow over Bo Nix and Joe Flacco every day. You're going to put Ja'Marr Chase over the receivers that the Broncos have or the, you know, Colts have. I know, you know, they've got talented guys on all three of those teams, but yeah, from a star perspective, yeah, sure, I get it. But have you watched the Bengals play defense? Have you watched the Bengals offensive line play? Like, they are bad. They are bad.
The line's the problem.
They're bad. And so, like, yeah, it's really easy on the surface to look at Cincinnati and say, oh, they've got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. They're great. They're better than these other two teams. Well, I think if the sum of all of its parts tells you anything, they're probably not. Now, can guys like Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase overcome the deficiencies that the team has? Yeah, sure. But I don't think it's accurate at all to say, they're better than those other two teams, because I don't think that they are. From top to bottom,
I think that they absolutely are. But the problem for them is their schedule is brutal. They go Baltimore, then Chargers next week on the road, back to back. They still got to play Pittsburgh twice. They do get Denver, and then the other two, like if you want to call them soft games, the Cowboys on the road and Cleveland. I mean, Tennessee's the only cupcake they have left. That's their problem. That's why their chances and their percentages are low, is because of the schedule they have to play. Whereas, you know, Denver's going to be in a division with the Raiders. And then, I mean, Indianapolis's advantage in all of this is their division sucks and their schedule is going to be soft down the stretch. So, you know, if you want the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, keep Cincinnati out of it. You'd much rather see Indianapolis. I mean, if you're a Chiefs fan right now, Tommy, I'll ask it to you this way. You're the Chiefs. You got a first round matchup and I know they'll probably have a bye. So humor me. You had a first round matchup. Who would you choose for the Chiefs to play? The least. Or power rank them. Who would you rather play? Indianapolis, Cincinnati, or Denver?
I would probably, out of those three right now, I would probably rather play Indianapolis out of those three. Who? And then probably Cincinnati, and then probably Denver would probably, I think that's kind of where I would rank.
There is no world where I'd rather play Joe Burrow in the playoffs than Bo Nix. That's what it is for me.
Would you rather play against the Cincinnati defense, or would you rather play against Patrick Surtain and what the Broncos have?
I get it, but in the postseason, give me Bo Nix 100 times out of 100. And I think, you know, like, we know that in the NFL historically, that's the way this kind of goes, right? Bad quarterbacks typically don't get that. I've done the exercise, and it's been in whatever it is, 30 years, there are like two seasons where a Hall of Fame or potential Hall of Fame quarterback have not won the Super Bowl. So, like, it does all kind of come down to that. Now, there are other factors, but it's the most important one, and not even close. It's the most important one when you get to the postseason. So if you're a Chiefs fan, I don't want to see Cincinnati in the postseason. I'd much rather Houston or Denver get in. Indianapolis or Denver get in. But that's, you know, you're 4-5. And this is not the first time we've been through this with Cincinnati either. They always start crappy, and then they're pesky by the end of the year. So we'll see how that goes. Big game tonight. A pretty impactful game tonight. This is another really good Thursday night football game. The fact that they get this on Thursday night, I am very much a proponent of the NFL putting good games on Thursday night. I know it's Thursday night, but by Thursdays, I'm ready for some NFL football. Where have you gotten to now that we're this far into Thursday night football? I love when we get these good games on Thursday nights.
I'm really excited for this game. I mean, now we're through the World Series. Like, that's all done. This is a really, really good matchup. I think it's a prime opportunity, like I mentioned at the top of the show, for the Bengals or for the Ravens to fully assert themselves as the team that can challenge the Chiefs for a three-peat. And so I definitely like this matchup a lot. I'm really excited to lock into it tonight. My only gripe, and you and I were actually, I think we were texting about this on, when was it, Monday night? When we had Monday Night Football, we had KU, we had Wichita State, we had all three of those games, you know, going at the same time. The odd man out for me was the KU game because it was on ESPN+. That's my only gripe with Thursday Night Football, is that it's on Prime Video, and so you can watch other things, but you have to get out of that program, you have to open up another application, you know, like, so if there's something else on, or if there are multiple games on a Thursday night, it makes it hard to watch all of them. So I like this game tonight because there isn't a whole lot else going on, so I can lock into it. But man, it's difficult when, you know, you've got Monday Night Football and you've got the Shockers that are on cable basically, and you can go back and forth. And then, you know, there's another game on ESPN+. That one was the odd man out.
You know what you need to do?
Don't even bring up the multiple TV thing.
Sneak down to the basement, put your foot down, and just hang a second TV.
You've met my wife.
What is the worst thing that could happen if your wife came home and there was a second TV down there? You think she's going to take it down? I mean, she's not going to divorce you for a second TV.
I think she would take it down.
She's not leaving those hardware holes in the wall.
Yeah, she is. She would take it down and she would patch up the holes in the wall before I even got home. Like, it would look like it did before I did anything to it by the time I actually realized what was going on. This is the same. I love my wife to death. This is the same woman that just for fun will, like, rearrange our refrigerator randomly. And I come home and all of a sudden the eggs are in a different place. And, like, it's just what she does. She'll rearrange the job that I do in loading the dishwasher. I'll come home and she'll, like, with dirty dishes, like, nope, that dirty plate goes there. Why are you rearranging the dishwasher? Everything is going to get clean. So, no, she would absolutely take down a second TV that I put up on the wall in my basement.
I think you take that risk. I think you just, it doesn't even have to be, but you can get TVs for nothing now, for like $100. Just go grab one. Just hang it right next to the TV to see what happens.
This is a trap.
Or don't even hang it. Don't even hang it. Do this then. Put it on the box. Like, just put it there, right? You're not going to throw the TV in the trash can. You just pull it out. It's they're all streaming everything now anyway. You pop it in, you got to connect it to Wi-Fi, bing, bang, boom. There you go.
I think more than anything, you just want to see what the ramifications of this
I
will be.
I certainly do. I absolutely want to see it and hear about what happens. That is 100% correct statement. Let's continue on this trade. Let's preview the Chiefs game when we come back. We really haven't dug into this game against the Broncos at all. We did a little bit in the first hour, but we'll do that next on the way out. You want to win some HTO, free iced tea, and free coffee, iced or hot? All you got to do to win one of each is text us right now. The keyword is T, and the short code is 20357. These will be good for any of the Wichita Metro locations, east or west or in Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. Sports Daily, previewing the Chiefs and Broncos when we return. NFL Thursday Night Football available for free on KFH and the Odyssey app. Tune into 97.5 and 1240 KFH at 6:30 for the Ravens, Bengals. Simply download the Odyssey app, search for KFH at game time. We previewed that game. Let's preview now the Chiefs and the Broncos, Tommy. We haven't really dug into this game. Rick pointed out earlier that, Denver's defense is really good. Sixth against the pass, ninth against the run. I would tell you this. I would predict that it starts on the ground for Kansas City. I think they abandoned that too quickly in the Tampa game. They admitted that. They talked about it. Mahomes talked about it. Reed talked about it. I think they're going to start there. Tampa also had a good run defense, and Kansas City was able to run the ball. So I think they'll start there. Patrick Mahomes yesterday basically called Patrick Surtain the best corner in the league. And he has one of the best corners in the league on his own team. But Surtain's next level good. Like, he is outstanding. I think for the Chiefs, you don't overthink it in this one, Tommy. You realize and understand that you're going up against Bo Nix. You take fewer risks in the game than you might in another game. You keep it simple. You run the ball and you take your shots. And I think, again, you and I both like Worthy in this game because the opportunity is there. I would imagine that Surtain focuses, if he should anyway, focuses on what we saw last week, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. It's probably not the week for Travis Kelce to slow down at all. He'll probably also be a big part of the offense, but I really like, you guys don't like the 7.5-point line. I normally don't like these long lines. I kind of do. I think more than anything in this game, Tommy, the Chiefs defense goes up against Bo Nix. That's what I look at more than anything else. And they need to feast here.
You not think that Bo Nix is a good quarterback? I mean, he's had, from a statistical point of view, outside of Jaden Daniels, who's had this extreme ascent over the last few weeks, Bo Nix is the next best rookie quarterback in the league. Statistically, he's been better than Caleb Williams has been. There's that, I think, to keep in mind also. And I don't think Bo Nix is incredible by any means, but he's, led them to a winning record so far as a rookie quarterback, and that's not even something that Caleb Williams can say at this point. I think for Kansas City, in my mind, you mentioned getting back to basics, running the ball. I do think they abandoned the run too quickly against Tampa Bay. When they started doing that again, that's when they started scoring points again against Tampa Bay in that second half. Will DeAndre Hopkins feast like he did against Tampa Bay? Probably not. The Denver secondary is better than Tampa Bay's secondary for sure. But it is DeAndre Hopkins, so I guess you never know. I think that Travis Kelce obviously got a ton of targets and catches in the Monday night game. While he will still be a large part of that offense, I don't think you can expect that kind of level of involvement from him on Sunday. I think Xavier Worthy, like we talked about earlier on in the show, it's an opportunity for him to really get a good share of targets and catches.
Back to Bo Nix. No, I think when the dust settles 3, 4, 5 years from now, we will look at Bo Nix as the fourth best quarterback in this class. Now, that's not saying he doesn't have a long career and all of these things, but I think long term, the three quarterbacks that were taken ahead of him, to me, will be better than him. He has had two really good games that came against the Raiders and the Panthers. And other than that, he's been very pedestrian. He can run the ball, though.
From a ceiling perspective, you may be right.
He can run the ball. And that's the threat, I think, for the Chiefs, is that he has been able to run the ball probably more than people expected him to be able to run the ball. There have been a lot of games where that becomes a real weapon for the Denver offense. And I think that that is something that the Chiefs need to watch and be, you know, very careful of, is to not let him do that. But strictly as a passer, I think he's had two really good games and a lot of like meh games. Either way, like when we talk about the Chiefs and all the teams they have played and will play, he's going to be one of the bottom end quarterbacks that they will have faced this year. And I just think for that defense, after a game where Tampa's offensive coordinator, where did he come? He came from the Rams. Where he's like, he has just been phenomenal this year. The fact that they were able to do what they did in that game without Godwin, without Evans, is pretty impressive. I don't think that they're going to get that in Denver. I think they go back and be the Chiefs defense. Glasser at a good point. Maybe the way to go is Denver's team total under. But where is Denver going to generate this offense? Maybe it's Knicks on the ground. McCaffrey's going to be able to take away their tie. I don't know. I'll put it this way. I'm taking the Chiefs in the points. Spoiler alert for tomorrow.
I would wait, because as PJ pointed out, that line continues to move and it continues to go closer and closer.
Correct.
You know, to the Broncos at least. And so I would wait until maybe close to kickoff, because you could get it under a touchdown.
That'd be incredible. But even if it's at 7 and not 7.5, we'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight when we return on Sports Daily.